Welcome to another episode of Pearls of Passage. I'm your host, Ellie Atherton. Today, I'm sitting down again with my dear friend, Dodie Cameron, retired operating room nurse and just an extraordinary person, really. She and I had some great conversations about the challenges of being someone's healthcare agent. And today we're going to talk about grief, the stages, the waves, the challenges around the holidays. So good morning, Dodie.
Good morning, Ellie.
I'm so glad you're here again.
Me too. I wish I was really there.
I know. So you're down in New Jersey, right? Visiting friends?
In New Jersey, visiting, staying with friends and visiting family, yes.
So we've got you on the phone. Thank you for making it work. I don't know. You embrace so many great things. You have an optimism, but you're very realistic. You're not afraid to, you know, talk about the challenges. We've talked a little bit about grief, and it's been, what, 4 years since Randy died, right?
And 4 years in October, yes.
Yeah. And tell me if I'm wrong, but I know in my life, I don't think grief necessarily gets easier. It just changes.
That's a tough question. You know, it comes in spurts, whereas in the beginning it's just this intense every hour, every minute of the day. Mm-hmm. But I think that's what changes in grief. You know, unless you get into complicated grief, I think it's something that's always with you.
Yeah.
But, you know, in preparing for this talk, I looked up the definition of grief, and it said, when you were, you know, discussing the topic of it today, and the definition was a simple definition. It was an emotional response to loss, mm-hmm. or a deep sorrow that is caused by death. And truthfully, I expected a much more elaborate description of a word that encompasses, you know, such a broad spectrum of emotions.
Right.
But I think it's a place to start, but sorrow didn't scratch the surface.
Right.
For me, grief was anger and fear, anxiety, fatigue, insomnia,
yes.
Exhaustion, loss of appetite. I mean, there's so many different.
And what about, you know, denial? Sometimes you're even in denial where you think, mm-hmm, you wake mm-hmm. up and you think, oh, this didn't really happen. Or I've picked up the phone and totally dialed a long distance phone number. You know, this was years ago when the phone was on the wall and you dialed. I mean, I remember calling my great aunt Harriet, who I talked to all the time. Not that I had forgotten, but I had something I wanted to tell her, and I picked up the phone to call her.
Mm-hmm.
And then I mm-hmm. thought, my God,
yeah,
she's
something that you're used to, that communication that you're used to. I was talking to my
right.
friend down here, and she was saying the same thing. If something were to ever happen to her husband, he calls all the time. You know, he checks in with her throughout, wherever he is during the day, he checks in with her. And that would be, you know, such a normal thing to do, to pick up the phone, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. And I think you know, that's just part of the habits in our life, you know, and those are the parts of grief that don't really go away. You know, you're used to sitting down to a meal with someone every night, or, you know, or snuggling up, you know, before you fall asleep. These little things, and you just miss them so much.
Well, one thing, too, in you know, thinking about this, people have expectations of your grief. And I think that's the one thing that I learned throughout it, was that understanding that your grieving process is yours, and
yes.
yours alone, and mm-hmm. there's no normal time frame that can be placed on it, and that grief is just a journey, and it's your journey, you know, so you just shouldn't allow yourself to put expectations on yourself, or let others put expectations on you, like, you know, okay, after the funeral you're done, or 6 months you're done, or now a year you're done. No, you're not.
No.
You know, it's just...
No, you're right. That's such a great point, because I think people are well-intended when they say, oh, you know, you should, you know, clean out their closet now. You shouldn't have all those things around, or, you know, they would want you. Of course, we know this. People would tell me they want their loved ones to be happy, but that doesn't mean you're not going to also be sad. They want you to go on and keep living, but part of that living does mean working your way through the loss.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
and I think You're right. Everyone does it in their own way, and there is no textbook. I mean, I love Elizabeth Kubler-Ross's books, and she has, it was funny because I pulled it out to read a couple of the things she wrote, but this kind of touched me because I think it's one of the reasons that grief can be hard, because we don't talk about dying to begin with. And she wrote this, you know, oh gosh, how old is this book? This is...
When did she start? Was it...
86. Let's see. It looks like 86, yeah. Well, it says, Death, the Final Stages, reprint. Originally printed 75.
Okay.
And so she starts the foreword by saying, death is a subject that is evaded, ignored, and denied by our youth-worshipping, progress-oriented society. It's almost as if we have taken on death as just another disease to be conquered. And, you know, she goes on to say, we all will die, and so on. It's a part of the human experience. And I think that here we are, like 45 years later, and I don't think we've come that far. We're getting there. It's getting a little better, but it would help people with the grieving if we could be more accepting, because, you know, I don't have to tell you, people don't, you know, want to make you sad, so they don't want to talk about Randy, or, you know, they don't want to ask how you're feeling, or they just disappear after he dies because they're uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting that the unusual places that support come from, but a lot of times people just back away because they don't know what to say.
Exactly.
They don't want to hurt you more, you know, so they step away. But for me, I can tell you some of my support experiences came in very different ways. If you have time for a...
Oh, yes, that's why we're here. Yeah.
She dropped two kinds of soup on the front porch. Just dropped them there. It didn't necessarily knock on the door. Just dropped them there. Would send me a text and say, which is your favorite? I'll bring you some more next week.
Oh.
And, you know, when you're in that really deep stage of grief, just feeling that comfort of soup from a friend, because you don't feel like cooking. You really don't feel like eating. You know, you just don't feel like preparing anything. So you don't eat or whatever. But the other little story that where support came from, I was finally venturing out, and it was my first outing to the grocery store. And I pulled into this space, and I sat in the car, and I just couldn't get out of the car.
Hmm.
And finally, I got out of the car, and I stood by the car, and I just... You know, just to step into the grocery store for the first time was huge for me, because I was trying not to cry. You know, but I'm standing there and the tears are coming. And finally I said, okay, I can do this. So I go in and I'm standing in front of the butter. I remember this like it was yesterday. I'm standing in front of the butter. And I couldn't even choose. I couldn't pick up the butter. Mm. This man came behind me and he said, did you just lose someone? I know what you're going through. Can I give you a hug?
Oh, my gosh.
Talk about angels being among us.
Yes.
You know, it just, in the time when your moment of your deepest sorrow, and he gave me a hug in the middle of the grocery store. I didn't know this man from Adam, and the tears just flowed, but it was just what I needed to put one foot in front of the other.
That's so beautiful. That's so beautiful.
It's just you never know where that support is going to come from, and from, you know, people you don't even know.
Right.
But you have to understand, you know, your friends don't know what to say. They don't know what to do.
No.
And they're also afraid of being chastised, not necessarily by you, but by everybody else. Oh, you said the wrong thing. You know,
right.
God forbid you say the wrong thing.
And that's,
you know,
so true.
And that's part of why people back away.
Yeah, and that's why I just so wish if we could get to a point of being more accepting that death is a part of life and not a failure, just learning more about how to prepare ourselves and how to support people. I mean, I have family that after losses, they just don't want to talk about it. It's depressing. Let's not talk about it. They'll come right out and say that. Let's not talk. And you think, but I want to celebrate. I love this person. I want to talk about them and remember the things we did and laugh about some of the things. Or that was part of my healing and grief process. So it's hard to find that middle ground when you're in the same family and you're all grieving differently.
Right, and that's people grieve so differently. But again, if you're a friend of someone who's lost someone and you don't know what to do, it doesn't hurt to just try, and then you'll find out, is that what this person needs? Maybe it's not.
Right.
Maybe it's something else this person needs, but to ask them what they need. And so often that's met with a stone wall, but on the other hand,
yes,
like bringing the soup to the door,
mm-hmm,
you know, well, maybe this isn't what you need, so I won't respond and say, don't bring any more or whatever. But,
right,
you know, you don't know until you reach out. You don't know until you offer what you have to offer. But then the person who's grieving also has to come to a point where they ask.
Yeah, and accept offers. Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Or simple things like, you know, after a loss of a spouse, most people feel the need to keep to themselves, to work through. But then, mm-hmm, you know, sometimes a simple thing like, do you want to take a short walk today? Or would you like to just come for a cup of tea? You don't have to stay long. The open-ended, simple offers, nothing big, where you have to be out in public, or because you know the conversation is going to be hard.
Mm-hmm.
I think sometimes I've just offered to friends who've had losses, why don't you come and we'll take a walk and we can sit on the bench by the water and talk. And that seems, mm-hmm, to be really helpful, because they're in a place where if they get teary, they don't have to feel uncomfortable that they're out in, you know, a public place where they have to hide it or have people look at them.
Right.
You know.
Mm-hmm. That's such a good point. Such a good point. Just sometimes sitting with somebody. Don't even have to talk. Just be present. Just sitting with somebody, going to their house and, you know, can I sit with you for a while?
Yeah.
You know, and sometimes, or touching their hand. I mean, touch for me,
mm-hmm,
was so important. Randy and I were touchers. I mean,
yeah,
you know, he walked through the kitchen, he'd give me a kiss on the back of my neck. He was always touching me. So
yeah,
touch for me was just such a loss.
Yeah, that's
and
hard.
I remember standing in the kitchen the morning after he died, and my cousin was standing there, and he gave me a hug, and I just burst into tears, and I said, that is what I'm going to miss the most.
Oh,
is
gosh. Yeah.
And even at night, we were always entwined with each other. I mean, for
yeah,
40 years, we had to be touching.
Yeah.
And that is such a devastating part for me and part of my grieving process. And so many of my close friends do understand that I need those hugs desperately.
Yes.
You know, I need that touch. So in those early days, sitting and just holding somebody's hand,
yeah,
you know, just sitting with them and holding somebody's hand can make a world of difference.
Yeah, human.
You don't have to talk.
Human touch is powerful. Yeah, sitting and compassionate, mm-hmm, listening is, it's hard for a lot of people to do that, to offer that, but it is a powerful gift to be able to sit and listen. Let them tell their story. Even if you've heard it five,
mm-hmm,
times before, let them tell the story. Let the tears come. Don't try to stop the tears. Don't say, don't be sad. Oh, you're going to be okay. Don't say anything. Just let,
mm-hmm,
just,
mm-hmm,
let them share.
Mm-hmm.
And it's our own discomfort that makes us respond in those ways. We don't want to see them sad because we love them. So we say, oh, you're going to be okay. Don't cry. It's not really that we don't want them to share. It's that we're so uncomfortable with it and we can't take it away. And we don't know what else to say.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
So I think those are great suggestions. Listen, hold their hand.
And not try and fix it. I mean, we're
right,
natural fixers. We want to make it better. We want to say something that's going to make it better. And nothing's going to make it better. You know, it's just, it is what it is. And it's going to be quite a while before anything starts to feel better. So to try and put an immediate Band-Aid on it or, you know, suture it up right away, it's not going to work. So
right. The
listening, I think, is so key. And one of the other things that I wanted to bring up was the milestones. The progression of grief. The year of first is so unbearably brutal.
Mm.
But for some, it's the year of seconds, because the first year, some people are just so numb, they don't even feel that first year. Jim Gideon wrote a book, The Year of Magical Thinking, and it chronicles her nearly out-of-body experiences that first year after the sudden loss of her spouse. And I would highly recommend that book. It was just... it was hard to read, and I read it long before Randy was even sick, but found it so profound. And, you know, you just never know when it's going to hit you on the side of the head, like a 2x4. You know, you can, even now, even 4 years later,
yeah,
you know, something will trigger a song, you know, a voice, never, besides the birthdays, the anniversaries, I mean, those things are obvious triggers, but there's so many. The first time I checked the widow box at the doctor's office.
Oh, gosh.
The tears just, I mean, not something you ever anticipate.
Right.
I checked the widow box, and then I had to put a different person down for my emergency contact.
Yes.
Those are the things you can't anticipate and that are just, whoa. You know, they take the wind out of you. So,
and it comes out of left field.
And I want to say that in the grieving process, you know, you have to just sort of go with it. You know, those are things you just can't anticipate.
And I've had people say,
it's very difficult.
Yeah, I've had people say, you know, I thought I was doing so well, and then I pulled into this parking space in front of this restaurant we love to go to, and it was always seemed to be our parking space, and I just burst into tears. I felt like he was there with me, and it just brought it all back, and I'd been doing so well, and I'm like, what do you mean? It comes in waves. You're doing well, but it's still going to come in a wave from time to time, like you just said.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many little things that are reminders that your life has totally changed, that that someone is missing, that you love so much, someone that, and I think I used to always say, at least for me, I believe this love never ends. I'm still loving people that I lost a long, long time ago, 25 years ago. I'm still loving them. I still think about them. I still have moments where, like when I peel potatoes with a paring knife, I always think of my grandmother because she taught me how. So
yes, that love is within you. That love is, you know, they say you carry them in your heart. You do. You carry them in your heart, and they pop out in all different ways at unusual times. I think Alison Dubois, the medium, the psychic medium who the TV show was about, just wrote another book. And some of her books I found very comforting in the process, but I think her newest one, was Love Never Ends, I think is what the title might be.
Okay.
But I found that to be very interesting, but just you bringing those words up.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did me.
And I feel the I don't know how to describe it, but I feel protected and I feel the love of people I've lost. I still feel it with me. I don't really know how I would describe it or write it, but I feel it. It's real. There's times when something's happening and I just can almost hear that person saying something to me. I can hear their voice in my head.
So
right.
True. And again, being open to that, you know, many people, you know, just sort of shun that thought that they're still around you. These loved ones are still around you. They're still with you. I talk to my husband all the time.
Right.
You know, I'll be having a moment or I'll need something. And I'll just say, hey, Randy, can you help me with this? You know, I'll be putting a necklace on. Randy, help me with this. I can't get it on.
I can't hook it,
I just I find myself talking to him in funny ways. But he keeps me with him, you know. It keeps him with me and me with him. And I just feel like he's not really gone forever, you know. And that helps, I think. I know many friends who speak to their deceased loved ones, and I think it's just very helpful. Some people may think it's crazy, but I don't think it's crazy at all, you know, so.
Well, I remember back in the 80s, I was just a young mom. I had just two little ones, and I was very close with their dad's grandmother, and she had lost her husband, you know, in the late 70s, right before I met him, so I never met Grandpa. But I remember her, she had a picture, she had several, but one right next to the bed. And I remember her telling me one day, she said, I talk to him every day. And she says, sometimes I'm mad at him for leaving me. He died suddenly of a heart attack at work. So it was, you know, very shocking to her. And she was alone and had to be moved from her home up to live with her son. And so a lot of traumas surrounded it. And she said, sometimes I'm still mad at him for leaving me like this. I love him so much and I miss him, but I'm mad that I have to go it alone. And I had never heard anyone say anything like that, like admit to being mad at someone who had died. I had to wrap my head around it a little bit.
I think that's so common. I think that's so typical. In fact, a friend I'm here with in New Jersey often says to me, I'm so mad at Randy for leaving us.
Yes.
Because we had so many plans. We had so many things we were going to do together. And, you know, I think anger, even though it seems totally inappropriate, is a very natural reaction. It's a very natural response, and I think it's really honest of that person to admit that and address it. I'm mad at you. You have any control over when you're going to die, but still, I think it's an emotion that is very normal.
Yeah, I'm glad I was, you know, in my probably late 20s at the time. And I was so glad that she taught me that lesson, that is a part of grief. Because I've met many people later, and I think I might have been confused or thought, oh, that's horrible. You know, that person died and you're mad at them. But, you know, in my work with hospice, I met a lot of people who, before their deceased loved one had died, they were saying, I'm so mad that, you know, they didn't take better care of themselves, that they smoked, and now they're dying. I mean, there was a lot of anger wrapped into it. And it was just healthy to be able to listen and not judge them for it. Because it was part of the grief. And like you said, it is a natural part of the grief. And I've met moms who've lost children. I have a friend who lost her son in an accident. And she said, when I read your book, you know what helped me so much is no one talks about the anger. I can't really talk to people about that, but I have anger at how the accident happened. People who were adults who should have known and could have prevented it. I'm mad at my son for making the choice to do the thing that caused the accident. And she said, it's been 10 years, but I still have some anger about it. She said,
That's
I don't.
Interesting.
Yeah, and she said, I don't know how to work through it.
Judgment from grief. If you can separate judgment from grief, I think that is the greatest gift. You know, not to judge the person who is grieving, but also for the person who is grieving to try not to judge those around them
right.
for saying the wrong things. For, you know, because you're angry at that moment in time when you've lost a loved one. You're angry because your life has forever changed.
Right.
You know, all your hopes and dreams have gone away, and now you've got to find a new path all by yourself. So you can judge people. You can be angry at everybody at that moment in time, but not to judge anybody from either side, I think, is such an important lesson in the whole grief process. So that in the end, that there is going to be joy, and the importance of accepting joy back into your life. Okay with saying joy can come back into my life. I took a trip with my oldest son out to Colorado, probably about, I don't know, 6 months after Randy passed. And I felt guilty, but it was the best thing we did for each other and with each other. And just, you know, hiking around the Rockies and enjoying the scenery. And you know, again, there were signs. There was this bird that followed us. We'd get out of the car and this bird was there. And we'd get out of the car and this bird was there and looking for the signs. But also moving on and finding a new way with friends. Like I traveled with friends to a cruise. And yes, I felt guilty. Many of the times I was on this cruise, I was like, why aren't you here with me? And I felt guilty having fun, but you have to allow yourself the ability to find joy in your life again, or you get stuck, you really get stuck and grieve.
And Randy would want that. He loved you so much, and I do believe that, you know, most of the people we lose want us to be happy. You know, of course they know we'll be sad, and they don't want us to just move on without a thought, but they want us to find joy again. And the part about guilt, I think, is such a big stumbling block for people, because they think, you know, I'm here, why should I be happy? They lost their life and it's not fair. You have parents who say, it was my child, your child is not supposed to go before you do, and I should have, could have, would have done this, and my child would still be here, or my spouse, or whatever. So, yeah, the guilt is really tough. And that goes back to some of the podcasts I've done about the negative messages we have in our head. And that's a good example of a negative message that holds us back from finding that joy, thinking that, oh, I shouldn't feel happy. But the other thing that happens, and I think often we don't realize it, and I heard this term from Brené Brown, but I had experienced it not knowing it had a better name, but foreboding joy. Have you heard of this?
No.
So foreboding joy. So for me, when I was in the seventh grade, my favorite uncle died suddenly after having the flu. And it happened right around the time that something really exciting was going to happen at school. So I woke in the morning. We got a 7 o'clock phone call from our relatives in New York that Uncle Carl had died. And I was just grief-stricken. Oh, it was the first death I had ever encountered. And I was so sad. And we knew we were going to go back for the services. And as I was walking to school that day, I thought, oh, but this big thing is happening tonight. And I'm going to miss it. And then immediately I had guilt. Why would that even matter when Uncle Carl has died? So that created this foreboding joy for me in that moment.
Interesting.
Yeah. That's and interesting. It turned out that we didn't go back until the next morning because, of course, it doesn't happen that fast. But at 13, I didn't know how quickly things happened after someone died. So,
yeah.
But later in my life, whenever something really great was about to happen, I would have this fear that something bad was on the cusp of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I started to recognize that, and I knew what it went back to. I could relate it to why, when it started.
Never heard, recognizing that, yeah.
But I had never heard that term. Well, I didn't recognize it at first. It was probably in my mid-20s before I started to see that pattern and think, why do I always have a feeling something bad is going to come along and spoil it? And when I heard that term, foreboding joy, I thought, wow, that is like the perfect label for that. And, you know, as I get older, once I recognized it, I could say, okay, this isn't true. This is an untrue message. And I am allowed to be in that joy. But it's funny, in the work I've been doing around forgiveness and just learning more about letting go and finding more joy, it's interesting that I am learning that we all kind of struggle with joy. We don't allow it to last very long. We tend to go stay more in the negative feelings. And when we get into joy, not that it's always foreboding joy for people, but if you start thinking about yourself, when you're in a joyful place, how long does that joy, like the butterflies in your stomach and all of that, how long does it really last?
And why do we not feel deserving of joy? I mean, that's a really interesting conversation, probably for another time, but wow, why do we not feel deserving of joy? This thing rings true. Yeah. It's like you're always waiting for the axe to fall. You can't just, and is it that you don't feel deserving? Is that part of it? I don't know.
I think it's one of these odd parts of the human experience that we don't really explore. And I also think as life has gotten crazier and technology has taken over more, we don't have the sacred quiet spaces to have the simple joys in life, as corny as that sounds, the simple joys.
Yeah, but true. Mm-hmm.
To me, some of the simplest joys are if I'm with my grandchildren and we're just in a moment, a silly moment, because kids are so great at being in the moment. And there's that real just joy and love that you feel in that moment. You don't have a care in the world. Or another example might be you're outside in the evening and I have a nice backyard. We have no streetlights in my town. So you look at the sky and you're just wowed by the stars in the sky.
Mm-hmm.
That we're this little teeny part of this huge, magnificent, beautiful universe. Things like that. Sometimes it's an intense joy where I think, wow, what a privilege this all is.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
And going back to grief, I think that's exactly what your goal is to find those moments. So bring that back into grief and to try and find those small moments like you're describing. And allowing yourself to feel that joy. But when you're in that deep grief, the sorrow, the heaviness of it, it's like you're in a bubble. I know the days following my husband's death, I felt like I was in a bubble. There were sounds around me, but they were distant. Life was happening. People, you know, but you're not part of it. You're separate from it.
And doesn't it feel...
No matter how you prepared for that. You don't understand it until you are in that and you feel that numb feeling where it's just life is happening and you just don't even want to be part of it anymore.
Well, and also it doesn't.
You go out into the backyard and you look into the night sky and you see the stars and you find that peace, that inner peace.
Right.
You know?
And, that connectedness.
I think that's where the healing begins, is in those little moments of joy and peace.
Yeah, and I think what I was going to say is when you're in that bubble and you don't want to be connected and you're just consumed by grief, I've just felt in those moments that it seems so unfair that life just goes on all around.
Yes.
This person, this special light has gone out in my life. It's not right.
Yes.
That everything just goes on normally, like there's not even a pause. And I just remember thinking that. Even, you know, when my uncle died, thinking, but the world hasn't stopped.
Yes.
And something's wrong. In my spiritual self, I felt something's wrong with that. I don't know what the answer, of course, would be, but that was the feeling that.
Oh, totally the feeling. Well, and how are they living their lives? I mean, it just, because your life has stopped. Your
exactly.
life is at a total standstill, and you can't move forward in that beginning.
You can't see the forward.
There's still anger towards all these people
yes.
that are smiling and laughing and eating and enjoying, and it's, how can they?
Right.
You know, my world has ended. It's just, yes.
And things like, you know, you have a friend who complains about her spouse all the time or doesn't treat him well, and you sit there thinking, oh, I'm just giving an example, but you think, if he were to die tomorrow, you don't have any idea how much you would miss him and how much you would wish you had been kinder. And, you know, I don't know about you, I think about that, and I've had people tell me, I see this person who has their child, and they complain about the stupidest things. Just love them. They're here. You're here. And those are the parts of grief that change our perspective on life.
Yes. Yes. You have any of that for a period of time, you
right.
know, and then you have to get back to wanting to listen to those stories. And it's just so normal for everybody to complain. But there is definitely a window.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you are just in that where how can people complain about their spouse, their children, their,
right.
you know, how can they not fight? But, yeah, it's exactly where you're at when you're in deep grief.
And so tell me, now this is another part. We're in the middle of the holidays, you know, Thanksgiving just passed. We're headed towards Christmas. This is a really tough time of year for people, whether they've had losses or not, just because of the level of stress, sometimes the financial aspect. But when you have people that aren't at the table or aren't part of the rituals, it's, you know, you're trying to have joy, but you're missing them. And you're thinking they're missing this too. How do you deal with that, Dodie?
Well, again, it's time. I mean, it's just time. I remember the first Christmas was just, it was just a teary day for our whole family. I mean, we were all together. Thank the Lord we were all together. And, you know, everybody had their moments of tears and hugs and tears and hugs. But each holiday, each Christmas got a little easier.
Mm-hmm.
Not that it ever, you know, I mean, I still, at Christmas, all the holidays are very hard, but especially Christmas is very difficult because
yeah.
we had our traditions and he's missing from that. But I have to say, time is a healer. You know,
thank
you don't
God.
Believe that in the beginning, but time is a healer, and you have to find the joy and replace that pain with joy.
Mm-hmm.
And you do. But it's hard. I still do, you know, do little things, you know, with him and for him. In fact, I still get him a little gift.
Oh.
I still get him a little gift. And
I love that.
Between he and I. I mean, I don't, the kids don't know that.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just, and it's just silly little thing, you know. But
if it makes you feel
like
better, that's
still a part of me. He's just still a part of me.
Aww.
And so I know you can develop your own traditions with your grief. You can, you know, just what gives you peace. I think, and you find peace over time. It's just time does heal. But that's very hard to believe when you're, you know,
when you're in it. Yeah.
Year one, year two, it's just, you don't think time will ever heal.
Well, and that first Christmas was only 2 months after he passed, so it was so raw.
Mm-hmm.
Thanksgiving was, what, a month after, and then you had Christmas and that first year. Yeah, it's hard.
Those were brutal holidays. Those were just brutal holidays. And some people don't even celebrate after the loss of a loved one. And that's okay, too. Mm-hmm. I mean, this year is the first year I put up a little Christmas tree. I did not have a Christmas tree, and this is 4 years. So I did not have a Christmas tree. Granted, my kids had Christmas trees, so I still could, you know, enjoy that. But for me, I couldn't put up a Christmas tree. And this year, I put up a little Christmas tree. It's probably 4 feet tall, and I used our ornaments. And I had the grands decorate with me. And so
it took years.
You'll find your path. You find your way.
And in your time, we started out talking about that. I think it's really important to say that. Don't let people make you feel that there's a certain timeline for grieving, because there isn't. There isn't. Mm-hmm. It's yours. You know, you find ways to work through it, and you connect with people. You're very social, and I think that's one of the beautiful aspects of you as a person, that you have so many people that you can connect with and who knew and loved Randy. And, you know, when they're with you, I'm sure that part of the gift of being with you is remembering Randy. You bring that also to life for them.
Well, thank you. But I think you just brought up something that I do have to mention that I found very difficult. It's amazing the people you lose when you lose a spouse.
Oh.
It is a multiple loss, because there are many friends who suddenly don't know how to be your friends anymore because you're not a couple.
Oh, yes.
So,
yeah.
I was heartbroken by it, but I understood it. You know, it's just some people were just couple friends.
Yes.
And now I have friends who are couples who are even more close to me than they were before. But on the other hand, I had a significant number of people who dropped away because perhaps they were more Randy friends, and or perhaps they didn't know how to be with someone who's lost someone.
Right.
I don't know. And, you know, now to me, it is what it is.
Yeah.
But it was a heartbreaker in the beginning to learn that you don't only lose your spouse, you lose friends.
Yeah, that is sad. That is sad. People can relate to it if they've gone through divorces, because I think it can be very common.
I experienced that too.
And I agree with you. It just made me realize, you know, there was a time and a space for them, and somehow they're not comfortable, you know, having me to the dinner party as just me. Mm-hmm. But it hurts. It hurts a little. It's another loss. Yeah, that's hard, but I guess that opening up these discussions is the hope that people will begin to reach out more, like you said in the beginning, and just make a simple offer. And it may or may not be accepted, but just keep trying.
Exactly. Yes.
You know,
yes.
Because you never know. There might be that day when the grieving person says, like you, I feel like I can do this today. I can put up the Christmas tree this year. I'm ready. And
well, I think, you know, if the message goes out from our discussion today is that to people who are grieving is to be patient. Be patient with yourself. Be patient with others. Be forgiving.
Mm-hmm.
And just, you know, take care of yourself and be kind to yourself.
Right. And don't isolate, because it's hard to grieve. You isolate initially, but if you isolate for too long, it's hard to move out of it.
That's when you get into the deep depression and grief gets very complicated. Yes. Mm-hmm. And not to be afraid to reach out to a counselor, or if you need to talk to someone other than your family and friends, to reach out to a counselor who's a grief counselor, or if, you know, your loved one's been in hospice, certainly hospice has wonderful programs for, you know, support groups and things. I never did a support group because I'm not a group person.
Right.
But I know friends who have, and
they loved it.
Friendships from it. And I almost feel bad that I didn't do it, because, you know, people have gotten friendships, you know, long time friendships that will probably go with them for the rest of their life, with people who have shared the experience, who have shared a similar experience and are on the same journey.
Well, that's it. And hospice offers that for a full year after the loss. So, and oftentimes they'll accept people who didn't have hospice. Some hospices open it to the public. So it is worth looking into. Many churches have grief counselors. Sometimes there's groups that are for, like, motherless daughters, you know, lost for parents who have lost children. There's all different groups. And Mm-hmm. I think it's wonderful. Oncology clinics sometimes offer support that way and have groups. And, you know, it's good to reach out and get support in any way that feels comfortable. And sometimes a good friend is like your best counselor.
Yes, the
best listener over a glass of wine or a cup of tea, that person that you can call at 9 o'clock at night when it just hits you like a tsunami and you say, oh, I just need to talk. And it's good to have those people in your life.
You're very blessed when you have those people in your life.
Yep, yes. And the hugs and the people who can give you hugs and not say anything and just let you have a cry, right?
Very true.
Well, Dodie, you are such a gift. You always bring such insight.
I enjoy our talks, and it's interesting that they've turned into podcasts, but I treasure our conversations.
Yeah. I mean, I think that there's nothing better than firsthand experience to talk about things like this.
Mm-hmm.
Because until you're going through it, I mean, everyone has suffered losses to some degree, but, you know, it helps to hear 4 years down the road how you've worked through different times and that you can say there was guilt about feeling joy. A lot of people will have these feelings, but they never want to say it out loud.
Yes.
They're afraid about being judged or they're afraid about being criticized.
And to hear other people and those experiences. And books, I mean, I can't. You know, books helped me tremendously. I can't come up with any titles right now, but there's so many out there. And some are not helpful at all, and some are just so helpful to read the words of other people.
Yeah.
You know, traveling a similar parallel journey to yours, you know.
Yes.
It's very helpful. So that's something I would highly recommend in the grieving process.
And you can do it in the privacy of your own home and at your own pace. That's the beautiful part of reading a book.
And your books, of course. I mean, oh my gosh, your books. I can't. I keep saying they should be in every doctor's office. They should be, but
Thank you. Well, I just got my first book. I finished my audio version.
And good for you.
Oh,
excellent.
It was so
listen.
It was so hard, Dodie, because even though I was there when it happened, even though I wrote it and edited it, you know, 10, 20, some of those, I'm not kidding, 50 times going through the stories, I still got teary and choked up, and I had to keep stopping the recording because I was like, I can't be blubbering. People, you know, I mean, they have to be able to understand what I'm saying. So there are times when I got choked up and I thought, hey, this is how it feels to me. But I got through it. So I kept those in, you know. But there were times when I just was like, okay, no, that one's not going to fly. You've got to go back, re-record, you know, take a breath, have a drink of water, do it again.
But that's very real. I mean,
sure is.
Allowing yourself to and your readers to hear that pain in your voice.
Yeah.
You know, bringing back the memory of it. That's, I can't wait to listen.
Yeah, so it's out there. It's out on, it's on Amazon now, so it's out on Audible, but it will also be out, I think it takes a few days longer, I think, to get onto iTunes and so on. But, yeah, so it's out there, and then I'll work on recording the second book, which will be so much easier now that I know what the heck I'm doing. I'm such a rookie podcaster, rookie author, rookie, but it's fun. It's fun.
Well,
learning.
You're doing an amazing job, and now you know
Thank
how difficult
you.
It is to read those. You know, I'd love to have people read to me. I love to listen to Audible books.
Oh,
and
gosh.
Now you know how difficult it is to
it
do
is.
That.
It is. And it's not perfection by any means, but I'm not a perfectionist. This is my first time out of the gate recording, you know, being the narrator of a book. And it's fine. It's 7 hours. I mean, it's long.
Wow.
So it took me, you know, probably 7 or 8 months to get it all done. But it's done, and now I'm going to just breathe a sigh of relief. For those people who don't want to read, you can listen, and then when you have a story you're not into, you just go click. Nope, sorry, Ellie, not today. Thank you again for this great conversation. I'm sending
you
a
for having me
big
and
hug.
Me to share my story.
Oh, always.
Helps to share, you know,
yes.
So I thank you for having me.
Yep, and I'm sure people will appreciate learning from you.
Thanks. All right.
Safe.
Have a good one.
Yeah, safe travels back.
Thank you.
All right, take care. Bye-bye. Oh, it's always so wonderful talking with Dodie. she had some good advice. I hope the discussion might have helped some listeners to think about ways to manage grief. And it is individual, so keep trying different angles because you do deserve to get back into that joy and still celebrate and remember and talk about the person that you lost and that you still love. So thank you for listening today. Remember, life offers endless possibilities. We simply need to be open to them. Here's to a good life and a good death. I want to do a shout out to Designated Diver once again for the beautiful music that starts and ends this podcast. Have a great week, everyone.